Accession number 11212, Reel 5.
Colonel R.B. Humphreys, Reel 5. What were the other reasons why the officers did not traditionally toast the reigning monarch, Colonel?
When the Prince Regent was Prince Regent before he came to the throne in 1820, his own mad father, George III, having died, about a year before, he came to dine in the officers' mess of the Durham Light Infantry. And he was so drunk that he slipped under the table when it came to the business of drinking his father's health. A loyal toast. And so we didn't drink it. And he sort of set in his cups from under the table, where he could, it had to be carried out, I think, and put to bed, you know, so taken off to the to his chaise long or whatever it was, and because he, I expect, I can't remember where they were stationed then, but he'd have to get back to his bed somehow. He said, "No bother to drink my father's health, because I'm Prince Regent and governing this country, and he's mad." And so, next day, we just didn't drink it anymore. He said, "Your loyalty is unimpaired." So, we went by that. Then the third one was that in the 1830s, the port allowance for officers was cut off. And so we said, "Well, we don't drink the king's health already. We won't bother to take the port allowance anyhow, because we all we did with it was just sweat it down. No drinking the king's health. So there we are."
When the was there any occasion when the or were there any occasions when the mess bill was in debit, and did you have to pay extra to make to?
No, we didn't have to pay extra. We found we had very good. It was a very rich regiment, Eton and all that. Most of them up till before World War One, and there were extraordinary built up reserves in the mess fund. The investments were such that the interest could be tapped quite easily without doing it any terrific amount of harm. So that's what happened, but it only worked out. Sergeant Last was a remarkable financier, and it generally worked out.
Can we go on a bit further now, Colonel? What other kind or type of uniform did you get?
We got,
or did you have?
Our service dress was our everyday dress, which was khaki barathia and proper plus fours, the sort of golfing type as it was in those days, not the troops plus fours, because they had sort of things that became trousers and went down like that. And they had a different type of uniform. They had a woolly type of uniform. We had smooth barathia, and we had a Greenlanded here, and we had DLI buttons, brass, not silver, and we had a round cap hat, and we had also a fore and aft, green, lovely fore and aft, which you wore in mess kit, as well as Didn't wait much for parades. Round hat for parades with the DLI badge in the front. DLI badge in silver. No, it wasn't bronze. Funnily enough, nearly all the bronze, the badges of rank were bronze. The pips and things like that. And the... Then we had... Didn't have green patrols for undress evening. We had blue done up at the neck with the DLI buttons down. And then we had casuals, or what you would like to call it, denims issued. They were definitely issue from soldiers' stores. And, of course, the boots you had to buy. You didn't get the black boots issued. Soldiers' boots. In fact, you had to buy all your kit. Apart from compass and field glasses, things like that, which you paid for, but you bought from QM stores, you had to buy every blooming bit of kit you got. Even, as I say, compass and field glasses. And then, of course, you had to buy all your camp equipment, of which you had masses. You had canvas buckets and canvas basins on stands and camp bed, one camp bed, and a bedding rail thing, you know, with all your blankets in. And equipment came from stores. Now, you didn't have to buy that. Webbing. It's one thing you didn't have to buy. Of course, it was different to the ordinary other ranks because they had pouches for different ammunition. And we had no pouches, but we had a leather holster for our revolver at our side.
What revolver did you get?
4.5.
Was it reliable?
Yes. Heavy, a kick. And then we got the 3.8 later. That year, I think we got the 3.8. Being a time of change in the weapons of the regiment. The old machine gun we had as machine gun platoons, except for the Hillman Minxes, which was Oscar's lush plush platoon in A Company, where he went round in Hillman cars with anti-tank guns. Four, that's all they had. Four anti-tank guns and Hillman cars. Well, they were a law unto themselves because they were mobile, very mobile, and with the tank not being really the fashionable thing in those days. Little Hart and everybody was shouting about the tank, the tank, the tank, the tank, and hobo and all that kind of thing, but it wasn't the fashionable thing. They were still back on the ones that had Combray. Old heavy World War I tanks. It was Tank Corps, right? It was called Tank Corps in those days. Carver went into Tank Corps. He became a Tank Corps officer down at Bovington. And that was the home of the Tank Corps. And as opposed to there was no Armoured Corps in those days. It was all cavalry. It was either cavalry or Tank Corps. And horse cavalry.
What size anti-tank gun did the regiment have?
Oh, an awful thing called the Boys. Heavy lead.
Now, was it efficient? God,
it wasn't a puller. It was a... Who put it to you? No, I don't think anybody can say it was efficient. It knocked you absolutely sideways when you fired the blooming thing. And in France and... At Dunkirk time, one or two people did get hits. I mean, it could penetrate a German tank, a light tank, anyhow. and they got perhaps a lucky hit. But, I mean, the number of hits against mobile warfare that they had in France when they the Blitzkrieg was minimal.
But in your very early days in the regiment, when you joined it, what were the duties that you were assigned to?
Well, teaching your platoon with your platoon sergeant knowing more than you, really, because after all, he very likely has been serving for 7, 8, 9 years.
What platoon did you have?
Well, I went to this 3 platoon, I think it was, in A Company for a week, and then Taffy Nicol was killed, so I went to 1, 2, 3, 4 was A Company, I think. 5, 6, 7, 8 was B Company. 9, 10, I think it was, in C Company.
And who was your...
Well, the company commander was a man called Percy, who was... He wasn't here because he was in hospital being treated for a war wound of World War One. He had a leg that blew up every so often. It was that old thing there called Percival Maxwell, who had a wife called Eileen. That funny old thing there. And I said he was a very, very old subaltern who had been passed over to as a subaltern because he could not pass his exam. I mean, he was a subaltern still at the age of much older than these others. He was older than Jumbo Sanders, the senior subaltern. And he was an Irishman and very nice, comely old thing. Been in the regiment, and owing to the fact that he was the second in command to Jos Percy, he sort of walked into the command the company, because a lot of these other ones were, they were all subalterns. Even the bright and coming Jumbo Sanders was a subaltern, and Poggles Gorson was the MTO, which was a British important job. Seabag had headquarter company, PRI, money, being a Jew. Ivor VA had sport company, expert on machine guns. Adjutant was Harold, CO.
What was his surname, Harold?
Simpson. He had a brother in the other battalion. CO, Jackie Churchill, second in command, Gray Wilson. QM, Harry Lowe. Company commander, A Company, George Stobart. Company commander, B Company, Sammy Batskin. They were both captains. And Seabag was a captain. And Ivor was a major. And, of course, Hal, being an adjutant, was a captain. A young and up-and-coming captain. And Poggles was a captain.
Were they all what you would consider or what you would discover to be good officers?
I should say all proved they're very good officers. Jumbo Sanders got DSO and bar and became brigadier, passed the staff college, as he was a senior subaltern who gave us a rocket again. Apart from poor old Percival Maxwell, who you couldn't say was a good officer because he was dumb as regards military knowledge. Myers Mason was an absolutely wonderful officer. Very good at swimming. Very, very, very good at games, hockey, and everything. J.H. Brown was a brilliant officer. Passed in under his own steam, topped at Staff College, and passed out equally well, and was a subaltern only. Came to us from the Staff College. No, sorry, that was before he was at the Staff College. He was made a captain to go to Staff College. Fox Davis, a very clever chap who became adjutant after Harold, but a sad, sad history because he was in the 2nd Battalion and he was an ADC to a general and he developed epileptic fits, epilepsy. And he, owing to the fact that he was found on the train when he was ADC to this general in the compartment, just going along to see the general, I think, with epilepsy, and he had one or two breakouts when he was in the 2nd Battalion in India, they gave him a year's sick leave. And he'd just come back because they found some special pills that if he took them every day, without fail, they kept the epilepsy away, and he never got it at all. And he went out to China and never got it. But he did get it in fighting in the desert because he just couldn't get them. And through Cairo, and he got an MC, and he more or less sacrificed his life. He rushed in, he got an MC doing it. But he sacrificed his life, and on his gravestone, it's in the Middle East, is Orphanaut or something like that. Very sad. Then there was Oscar, who was alive and kicking. Reggie, who was alive and kicking.
That's Reggie Atkinson.
Yeah. Robert Allen, who was killed commanding A Company, Kohima Ridge, having done a wonderful attack. And he was killed on consolidation by a stray bullet. Poggers Dawson died the other day, but he became adjutant of the battalion down in Stockton, which was a gunner battalion, and transferred to gunners, having lost his copybook, being divorced. Seabags at 90 alive and kicking. I wrote to him the other day for his birthday. Ivor B.A. died of a dual needle ulcer in the war at Bransworth. He was commanding at Bransworth.
Was that his surname, Ivor?
Yes. V.A. was a Dutch name, I presume. W.I.E.H.E. And his father was in the regiment before him and at the Crimea. Harold had a brother, R.B.Y., and his uncle was Basil Simpson, his cousin, who lived at Wylam Hall and was a son. He was a regular soldier in World War I, and he retired after the war, and he became Sir Basil through his father, who was Sir Frank Simpson, who was the commanding officer in World War I of 9 DLI. Sir Frank. So he had great traditions in the regiment. Jackie Churchill, old Etonian, joined 1908. Father was a cavalier, I think. But he was old Etonian, rich, well, fairly rich. Gray Wilson, old Wellingtonian. No, as far as I know, no relations at all in the regiment. Harry Lowe, of course, is a law unto himself. He started as a private in 1902, and he finished, now this was 1935, and he finished as a lieutenant colonel in 1948, but he carried on as the regimental secretary of the association till his death at the age of 85 in 1970. George Stobart, law unto himself, because you know he only died 2 years ago. Memorial service was 2 years next April, this April coming. And Harry, Sammy Bascom, now 87, in a home, perfectly compos mentis, but not, writing's not easy, in a home at Ickworth in Essex, near Euston.
What about the NCOs that you had in your company?
Well, Marks owned the company. The CSM was a man called Wilson, Biff Wilson. He had been a transport officer, and he was a great fellow on horses. He knew all about horses. A rough diamond, a rare rough diamond from Gateshead. But he'd been in the regiment in World War I. He had 3 World War I medals. The colour sergeant was Jennings, and he'd, I think he'd just been in World War One. No, I don't think he had. And his great famous expression was, which with the boarded buildings, you can hear in the company office very easily through. And when some particularly stupid private soldier came in and asked him about his account or something, he used to say, "You fucking sausage." And he talked like that. "You fucking sausage. Can't you understand you're in debt?" And you could hear this through the partition. And when we were waiting for old Percival Maxwell to take the cases on for orderly room, you know, the company office, we always were there. And if it was our man, he said, "What sort of man is this?" And we spoke up, the three of us. Three platoon commanders were standing there ready. And, well, that happened once a day. And the CSM marched them in. And then he had the case. See, old Purse would say, "And what have you got to say today? Why did you do this?" And the man would make some stupid excuse very likely. If he didn't make a stupid excuse, he got away with it. If he did make a stupid excuse, Purse could give up to 7 days confined to barracks without referring it to the CO and higher authority, without it going to the orderly room. So Purse used to say, "7 days to barracks." There weren't any fines in those days. No. You didn't lose your money. But of course, if you got worse, detention, that was meant, that could be given by the CO. You lost your money because you were virtually imprisoned in the camp. You did fatigues and that kind of thing, but you were virtually in prison. You were not allowed to escape out of the camp to go out. Whereas with confined to barracks, you were just confined to barracks, but you were able to walk around under guard with detention. And then you lost your money, and you could have up to 28 with a CO. And then it was a court-martial after that. And the CO had the right to remind him for court-martial.
Now, what kind of duties were you performing then when you joined the regiment?
As I say, running one's platoon. Getting in to know how to run one's platoon. And to walk across and immediately in the morning look at the barrack rooms. See all the boots were dead like that. The blankets were straight. They were all made up on these beds. And you pulled the mattress up and turned it over. And then your blankets went on top. And then your boots on either side, your soldier's boots, and then his boot laces done up, and these bright boots were his guard and parade boots, so they had to be absolutely, and they were turned upside down so you could see the polish on the heels, yeah, and they had studs, of course. Some people even went as far as burnishing the boot studs and heel pads. And of course, when they went on guard, those who were particularly well turned out, and it was well turned out, because, I mean, orderly officers demanded to see underneath their boots, to see whether they were polished and everything, got the stick, which was a stick they carried for the day, and they were the orderly room runner. So it meant they got off guard that night because there was no orderly room. So it meant they got their sleep, and they got off complete guards for that day. Now, if you notched up so many sticks in a short time, running, you got exempt from guard for a week or 10 days. I mean, it didn't come round all that much, because there were 30 men in a platoon, and it was a battalion guard. So, I mean, you've got to take 12 30s eligible. Of course, batmen weren't eligible because they might have to wait in mess instead. And grooms weren't, because there were horses to look after right up into the night, especially if they'd been hunting, horses sweating, and they had to go and feed their horses and everything. And drivers, some of the drivers weren't, because they were standing by to drive vehicles needs be at night. And of course there was a terrific transversion from the Meenum machine gun battalion being all vehicled, because my batman used to have for me a little baby Austin, a little tiny baby Austin, as the platoon commander's vehicle. He had to learn to drive. A fellow called Metherington, as I say, did it for 3 weeks, and then he went to the signals. And then I had wonderful batter Edwards, who was with me for so long time, and then when he came out to China, was no longer with me, because we had Chinese batman then. But he was a wonderful rugger player. He was a great chap batter. An amusing story when I was at Bovington, I'll tell about him, which I didn't know until I heard when he when he was RSM inside.
What is the ideal relationship between an officer and his batman? What would you be hoping and aiming for?
Well, affection, I expect, really. You had to try and build up affection. You didn't call him by his Christian name or anything. You only called them batter when they were older. And he was always known as batter, and he used to write in his Christmas card, Sir, from Josie and Batter. Josie was his wife's name. I have to have a build up a relationship of affection and loyalty between officer and batman. Loyalty by example, I expect, of the officer. An affection, by affection.
Being at Blackdown, you did mention the fact that your accommodation that you first had leaked with the
raid. Awful.
What was the rest of the accommodation like in all? What was it like?
Well, the men had new barrack rooms, some of them. A lot of new barrack rooms, but they were building men's first, which is right, and then coming back and going to build officers, messes and things.
And did you each have your individual rooms?
Yes, quite big ones. And a veranda outside, which also leaked. So the water, I mean, when it came slanting ways, anyhow, it came in. But it was a wooden veranda, and it leaked. The billiard room, funnily enough, didn't leak. Well, I think it was because it had a special reinforcement of felt on the roof because of the table. You couldn't have water lying on two billiard tables. And the anteroom didn't leak. I think in the middle they'd put this special stuff on, and the anteroom and the dining room, we didn't have to have wet breakfast or anything like that. And the mess office and the place where they kept the drink and that sort, and the silver, none of that leaked. But on the other side, I was on the left side, as you look at it, the middle, they had the middle, they had the dining room, the billiard room, the ante room, and everything else. And on the right side, leaked again.
What furniture would your room be?
Quite adequate. A nice big place with a wardrobe with to hang your clothes. Of course, you find your own hangers. Three, four chest of drawers, four thing, chairs, couple of chairs, three chairs, an easy chair, a nice easy chair. Writing table, small chairs to go to the writing table, table lamps, bed, a very nice bed. Although it was army type, it was you made them, they went down like that. Again, you had to be careful to see it wasn't under a bucket hole, because that was very distressing if so. I never had mine under a bucket hole. Have suddenly drip in the middle of the night.